Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 372. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. Just excited to be back, and another day closer to ball. So we're getting really, really close to spring training and just draft season. So Dynasty, redraft, all that, we got you covered. So we did a redraft episode last week. I guess not last week, earlier this week, looking at the American League, and we're going to hit the National League today. So looking forward to those prospects to break down.
Man, you say that, you know, spring's coming, but I look outside right now, and I don't really believe that. Is it snowing outside right now currently here in the great state of Maine? Which is why we are doing maybe our first ever Thursday at 4 p.m. recording.
Yeah,
usually record, you know, 8:30 Eastern time at night. But I was, you know, I got out of work early. Thought we might lose power tonight. No, we probably won't. But just in case, like, yeah, let's record a little early.
Right. So knock it out.
Yep. Just in case, because you never know here in Maine, someone could slide off the road into a telephone pole. That happens a lot. So, yeah, National League prospects to target in redraft leagues. Did the AL version on Monday, so we'll do the same format. Let's go team by team alphabetically in the National League, talk about who could debut, who won't, who's worth targeting, you know, ADPs, all that fun stuff. But before I get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB. I am at Eric Cross MLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content available with RotoBaller's MLB Premium Pass. RotoBaller's VIP Draft Kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also has plenty of content from Chris and I, of course. Now we get plenty of prospect and dynasty stuff over there on RotoBaller. Sync your leagues with TeamSync to use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league-specific settings. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED to get 10% off at checkout. All right, so alphabetically means we start out west in Arizona, and then one big name here and another smaller name that already debuted for them. Now the two notables here, we'll start with Jordan Lawler, kind of becoming the National League version of Chase DeLauder, where it's like, you know, high upside, but starting to question the durability. You know, obviously missed a lot of time last year. Lawler played in just 23 games, but got some more work in the Dominican Winter League, 27 more games down there. It's kind of mediocre, but coming off 2 years in 2022 and 2023 with over 15 home runs and over 35 steals. Right now they got Geraldo Perdomo at short, Eugenio Suarez at third. What's your outlook for Jordan Lawler this year, Chris? You think, first off, that the 2024 durability issues are behind him, and how much time do you think he sees at the major league level?
That's a great question. I think it comes down to how healthy he is, which he should be at this point. He just played the Dominican Winter League. Honestly, wasn't very good at all in the Dominican Winter League, which is a little bit concerning. He got everybody hyped with the home run in the first game, and then after that, it was kind of, it was just okay the rest of the way. But the consistent injuries have obviously been a concern with him. Now, you look at the kind of production Jordan Lawler could have, and I think there's certainly power speed upside. The EVs are not good, which is concerning, but also last year dealing with a hamstring injury certainly affects that. But the contact skills have been my biggest question pretty much his whole career, is how much contact would Lawler make and how would he fare against major league pitching? We know the speed's there. He's an elite runner. Where's his position? I mean, he could play third base for this team. I think he does start down in the minors, if we're being honest. But eventually, him and Perdomo on the left side of that infield could be a lot of fun. They move Eugenio Suarez to DH, and all of a sudden, that's a really good infield with Naylor at first, Kettle Marte at second, Perdomo at short, and Lawler over at third. So I don't know. I mean, I'm curious when he comes up. I'm not confident. I don't think he's on the opening day roster, but could be wrong there.
Yeah, I don't think he. I think if he had not missed so much time, I think it'd be a better shot. But I kind of feel like they want him to get his feet under him again, start him off in AAA. But a hot spring could force their hand. I just wrote about this, the other day where, I feel like, first month, probably in AAA is my guess. But, end of April, early part of May, Lawler's doing, hitting well in AAA. Maybe Perdomo's struggling. I could see them making the swap or, trying to figure out a way to get Lawler's bat in the lineup somehow. Because obviously he's top prospect. He's got plenty of upside. We'll see what the average kind of winds up at, but that power speed blend definitely intriguing for fantasy purposes. I mean, long term, this could be a guy that's pushing 20 home runs and 25 plus steals. I'm not gonna say he's gonna do that right off the bat, but definitely has that intrigue when he does get the shot. And if you want Lawler, you're probably gonna have to draft him. He's not one where you can just wait until he's called up, especially if he's gonna be as early in the season as we kind of think, because you look at his ADP here, and I'm using NFBC. I'm only gonna go since January 1st just to get rid of all those super early drafts where stuff was pretty wonky. But Lawler's ADP since January 1st is 360. So 12 teamer. Maybe he's not being drafted on 12 teamer, but like a 15 teamer, he's probably last round upside play. But he should be up fairly early. I'd say, health permitting, 450 or so plate appearances this year for Lawler, I feel, is like kind of the sweet spot. So, definitely one of the higher upside guys that will debut this year. But also, Adrian Del Castillo got some time last year with the D-backs and, actually was hitting pretty well. I mean, he was kind of filling in for Moreno at the time, but, he had 4 home runs, hit over 300 with the D-backs, and had pretty good success in AAA as well. And 87 plate appearances with Arizona, had an 11.5% barrel rate, but did strike out a good bit, 32.2%. So don't think, obviously, not going to hit over 300 again, but any intrigue for you with Del Castillo, Chris? I mean, obviously, Moreno's there. He's probably not going to get much time to start the year, but maybe I could see you drafting him as like a fourth catcher in a DC or something like that. Because if he does get another shot, he could have value in two catcher formats.
I think so. It's just the problem is there's like nowhere else for him to play. Like he's not going to play first over Josh Naylor now. And does he fit in DH? They've got several guys in that role. I do like the bat with Adrian Del Castillo, which is the reason that I still want to be in on him. And he's on the 40 man, obviously. He performed well when he came up. So I think he could get 200, 250 plate appearances wouldn't surprise me. So end of a DC, I think he is a good target.
Yeah, outside of him, though, I don't really see. I mean, maybe we see Yulber Diaz get some, you know, additional starts this year. But I don't know. That's really the only other name in the system. There's some other guys that could be up next year. You know, I don't think Tommy Troy debuts this year, but you know, 2026, you could see like Troy, Cresantes, you know, Drew Jones, etc., plus a few others. So, but this year, really just Lawler, Del Castillo, and maybe Yulber Diaz. Any other name you wanted to throw in?
Nope. Nobody else relevant for this year, in my opinion.
All right. Then no need to keep going here. Moving on to Chris's Atlanta Braves, where the intrigue here, there's a few names of intrigue here, three of which on the pitching side, but let's start with the hitter here with Drake Baldwin, who is my highest ranked Atlanta prospect ahead of all their pitchers. And I think I've called him the most underrated catching prospect in the minor leagues, and I still very much believe that. I had a really kind of under the radar good year last year. 276, 370, 423 slash line with 16 home runs and 124 games between AA Mississippi, AAA Gwinnett. But under the hood, you know, contact skills were good. Power was, you know, very good. But, you know, Sean Murphy is currently there. I don't know, but backup catcher right now was what, Chadwick Tromp? Who, instead of having a phenomenal name, is not that great of a baseball player. And Murphy's missed time each of the last two seasons. So I could, you know, I still like Murphy. I think he's going to bounce back, you know, assuming he's healthy and he can stay healthy this year. But I think Drake Baldwin gets some run here. And if he does, I think the bat's going to play.
Yeah, I could certainly see him getting enough run, playing a couple days a week. And Murphy has not stayed healthy. So that's obviously on the flip side of things that, you know, in a pinch, Baldwin comes up and is the guy. And the bat's ready. The glove's good enough, in my opinion. I mean, Baldwin hits the ball incredibly hard. He's got really good contact skills and a pretty good approach, too. So, you know, there's some team models that have Baldwin as one of the top catching prospects in baseball. And some teams actually, team-like sources actually believe that to be true. I mean, you look at the data and it all backs it. So it's hard to argue against it. 2024 was not a fluke because Drake Baldwin had put up elite underlying data for the previous seasons as well since he was drafted. It's just he played in very pitcher-friendly parks. The entire Braves lower level, the minors, is very pitcher-friendly. So a lot of their hitter stats get pretty masked. So, yeah, I mean, Mississippi, notoriously a very bad place to hit. Rome's not a great place to hit. Augusta's not a great place to hit. So, you know, the surface numbers for some of those guys aren't nearly as good. But Baldwin had checked all the boxes consistently. Saw him in spring training this past year, and he looked good. And the breakout fully happened. So, yeah, I'm buying in on Baldwin. I think he gets plenty of reps this year. I mean, if he's not traded, which I still think is a real possibility he could get traded, I hope not, but I think that he could be traded. If he's in Atlanta, 250 plate appearances, maybe 300, because I don't trust Murphy to stay healthy. Those are real possibilities. The team is not going to, if Murphy gets hurt, Chadwick Tromp is not going to be starting for the Braves. I mean, just he's not.
Right. He'll just stay the backup regardless. So, yeah, I love Drake Baldwin. He's got, I moved way up my prospect rankings over the last year. He's a top 100 guy overall, pretty solidly for me. And like, I think I have like the fifth or sixth best catching prospect for fantasy purposes. I mean, you know, like Chris said, the numbers have always been pretty solid. Like 2023, contact rate of around 76%. This past year, it was over 80%. Very underrated catcher and a very good bat. So yeah, I've already gotten one share of him, and you know, I'm trying to, every DC I'm going to be in, I'm going to try to get some shares of Drake Baldwin, you know, my third, fourth catcher, whatever it is. I think he's provided a decent amount of value this year. So I like Drake Baldwin a good bit. And then we got the pitchers. Obviously we get AJ Smith-Shawver. We got Hurston Waldrip. Now, the rotation, the first, well, three, and eventually four, you know, with Sale, Reynaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, and then Spencer Strider in, what, a month or so into the season, something like that. So you'll have those four spots on lockdown. You know, as of now, you probably guess Grant Holmes will get some run, or Ian Anderson, until Strider's ready. obviously, we've seen both, you know, we've seen Waldrop perform, pitch very well. We've seen Adish Machaver skyrocket up rankings, get some time with the Braves. So how much time, you know, how much, you know, innings do you think these guys throw in 2025, Chris? Like, do you think there's a path outside of, like, several injuries happening to Adish Machaver and Hurston Waldrop having fantasy relevance this season?
I mean, I think AJ is definitely the case. I mean, it's important to remember he just turned 22 this offseason. He debuted at 20. And I think people have just completely just pushed AJ Machaver aside. And that's a mistake, in my opinion. I mean, the arm talent's there. He made some arsenal tweaks last year for the good. The fastball did allow a lot of home runs, which was the issue in AAA. I mean, if not, the numbers would have been really good. But the pitch data on AJ Machaver still very, very good. I think that he has a path to be in the rotation out of camp. Yeah, what I saw out of Ian Anderson to end last year after coming back is not of a pitcher that's ready to pitch in a major league rotation, especially a contending team. And I think AJ is just in a much better place than Ian Anderson, if we're honest. I think Grant Holmes gets run, but I think AJ Smith-Shawver has the runway to take that fifth spot, completely buying and believing that. Waldrop, I think he's down in he's in the minors. I think he's got some things to work on. He missed some time last year with injury, so he's a little bit behind developmentally. I don't think we see Waldrop in the majors until later in the season if all goes well. So AJ Smith-Shawver is the one to target here. The sleeper in this org is Drew Hackenberg, though, who reached AAA last year. Former second rounder out of VT that everybody kind of was caught off guard when they selected. And Hackenberg made a massive jump last year. He added, you know, three ticks to his velocity with a fastball. His command is pristine. He paints the corners extremely well, has some strong secondaries, and he throws so many strikes. Like, if you want someone that could make a Spencer Schwellenbach type leap who seemingly comes out of nowhere and blast off, then I think that Drew Hackenberg might just be that guy. He's a really interesting arm. He had the opposite problem. AJ Smith already allowed two home runs all season last year in like 130 innings, something along those lines. So he was like one of the best marks in the minors for home run rates. I like Hackenberg a lot. He's almost 23, so he's got the experience. And I think that he's probably somebody that gets starts in Atlanta. So a last round DC kind of stab like Drew Hackenberg is it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like, I can't remember exactly, but I feel like Schwellenbach probably similarly ranked this time last year to where Hackenberg is now. I think in general, ballpark, I don't think anyone's talking about Hackenberg as a top 100 guy right now. Same with Schwellenbach last year, maybe more like in the 200 range or something like that. But yeah, definitely. He gets overshadowed. So I love targeting these guys to just get overshadowed by bigger names. Everyone talks about Machaver with Waldrop, now Cam Caminiti. But you know, he's a very good arm in his own right, like you just mentioned. So, yeah, I could see that as well. Plus, obviously, some injury concerns in this Atlanta rotation. And Chris Sale coming off Cy Young year, but you know, we all know that he has had some issues staying healthy. You know, Strider's coming back off, you know, major surgery. So, you know, Reynaldo Lopez, you know, who knows? Like, there's some risk. So I think you'll see some other names get some run this year. And Alex Machaver still a decent amount. He's still coming like on the border of being a top 100 guy overall for me right now. So yeah, definitely I can see him getting like around a dozen starts or so this year, and maybe Hackenberg gets a handful as well, something like that. It could be more, who knows. Lastly, any love at all for Nacho Alvarez anymore, Chris? I know he was like a hot name for a second and a half. I never was a big fan. But you think he gets a run? And if yes, any intrigue at all from you?
I just don't know where he plays. I don't think he's not a shortstop. So, like, that's the obvious spot. Take Arcia's spot. He's not going to play over Albies or Riley. It's a hit tool. Good OBP profile with not much else. So, for fantasy purposes, like, you know, Nacho just doesn't appeal all that much to me, even though, like, there is a pathway to playing time because we know Albies hasn't stayed healthy. And obviously, Alvarez got some reps then. But for fantasy, I'm not all that excited about him.
Yeah, I'm not either. I really don't see him getting any run. I think they're going to bring in somebody to play shorts. I don't know. Bo Bichette obviously has been rumored to be on the trade block all offseason. I think that'd be a fit. So I don't know. We'll see. But I don't think, I don't see him outside of Riley going down or something like that. I don't really see much impact. Even if Nacho does get a shot, I don't know. I don't have much intrigue. He said, like, It's he hit a solid average, give you a decent OBP as well, but not a lot of power, not a lot of speed, not a lot of intrigue for me, that's for sure. All right, moving over to the Chicago Cubs, one of the better farm systems in all of baseball, and they have obviously the big name here that is, I think, going to be one of the best rookies of the 2025 season. Guy I have in my top 10 overall, and that's Matt Shaw. Still rumored to be in on Bregman, which could throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into this, but assuming they don't get Alex Bregman, you know, Matt Shaw has, I think, a really good chance of winning that third base gig that was previously occupied by Isak Paredes. Out of spring training, there's not really any other big threats, so I think if he's absolutely terrible in spring training, maybe they give it to, like, John Birdie or Gage Workman, but as long as I think Shaw has a decent spring, he doesn't have to dominate, just a decent enough spring, I think he gets the job here. You know, Shaw, one of those guys, doesn't have that standout tool, there's not huge power, huge speed, but just solid above average ball player across the board. And after that slow start last year, really, like, he almost went, I think it was almost 18 home runs and 21 steals, I think it was, in the last, like, you know, 4.5 months of the season. So really turned it up, you know, potential for 2020 long term. And if you're getting that type of production from third base, you know, as we know, we don't get, you know, a lot of steals from that third base spot outside of Jose Ramirez and, you know, maybe, you know, one or two other guys every year. So it'd be a pretty valuable profile, would be anywhere, but especially from third base. So I like Shaw a lot. He was my first round pick in the FPAS rookie draft that we did. I think I had like the seventh. Yeah, I think Chris and I had the last two picks. I went with Matt Shaw, seventh overall. I think he's had a pretty good year, and I think he's one of the front runners for National League Rookie of the Year. So I'm very much fine with his draft position because he is, let's see, at pick. What a match here. I probably just did Matt Shaw on my search. How many mats are here? Oh, my God, there's a lot of mats. There he is. Pick 216 on NFBC. If you're getting him for your corner infield spots, I think corner infield does dry out a little quickly. I'd be absolutely fine with Matt Shaw as my corner infielder this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to play. I don't worry about how this could shake out with Alex Bregman. I think that there's been talk, well, if Alex Bregman signs, then what happens with Matt Shaw? Well, Nico Hoerner's injured right now, and
that's true. Yeah,
there's talk that he can miss the first month, maybe, and they also want to trade him. So that's the other thing. Like, there's been a lot of rumors swirling around Nico Hoerner trade. In that case, Shaw could play second, Bregman could play second. Like, they're kind of interchangeable in those spots. I think Shaw has one of the safest floors of the rookie hitters. He's just consistent across the board. He's not flashy, doesn't put up like huge exit velocities, but they're above average. Contact rates are above average. The approach is above average. He's got above average speed. Like, I think Shaw's just going to do everything really well.
Yep.
I think he's probably the favorite, in my opinion, to win NL Rookie of the Year because I do think he's up on, I'm confident he's up on opening day. And I think the floor gives him a really high just context to just hit out of the gate and be really successful. So, yeah, I'm definitely excited about Matt Shaw's outlook for sure. And I think he's worth drafting as ADP 100%.
Yeah, right now I think it's going to be, you know, I mean, Lawler's a dark horse, but I think the two front runners right now for NL Rookie of the Year are Dylan Cruz and Matt Shaw. And I think it's those two by a solid margin. I don't think we see anybody else up soon enough. Again, maybe Lawler could factor into that. You know, Painter maybe would have if he was going to be up earlier than July or whatever it's going to be. But yeah, Shaw and Dylan Cruz, I think, are the two there. We'll get to Dylan Cruz much later in the show. Last team, obviously, in alphabetical order. But it's not just Matt Shaw here with the Chicago Cubs. I mean, obviously, as I mentioned, the Cubs have one of the more fun systems in all of baseball. Well, at the top, it's not a super deep system, but definitely has the top-notch talent. Like, I have six guys from the Cubs in my top 100. And really, you know, Shaw is one of them. And then the other four of them, I think, could see time in the major leagues. I mean, you got Owen Casey, you got Kevin Alcantara, you got Moises Ballesteros, you got James Triantos, who's maybe the one that doesn't, but you got Alex Canario. He's not top 100 for me, but he could see time as well. He already has debuted. All the other guys, Casey, Horton, Alcantara, playing the upper minors, AAA, Ballesteros too. I mean, I have all these guys at 2025 ETAs, Chris. I mean, they're all very good, but outside of, you know, Shaw, there's really no, you know, clear path to playing time for any of those guys in the outfield. It's Happ, it's Tucker, it's PCA. I mean, that's pretty entrenched right now. At DH, you got C.S. Suzuki. I mean, infield, like, there's no open spot for them. So I guess, I mean, I know we like a lot of these guys, but, you know, do you see any, you know, bigger impact for any one of these guys that you like more than the others for this year?
I think Alcantara gets the first crack. I mean, he's been up, and he's a better glove than Owen Casey. So I think that that's probably where I'd lean if there was an outfielder getting time. James Triantos could also, his versatility could allow him to fit in this picture. You know, while Casey did get added to the 40-man roster, I still think there's questions on, you know, how much does he play? How does he fit in this puzzle? And right now, there's not a great fit. So I think that, you know, I don't know, Alexander Canario, I'm not even sure he factors in, if we're being honest. Like, I think that he's just kind of not a thing anymore. But I would say after this group, like, Ballesteros, they're going to continue to develop as a catcher. He just turned 21. I know he reached AAA last year by, like, the All-Star break, but he's not going to get substantial time this year. I would say Alcantara is, like, the next crack of a guy that I want, and then it's Casey, but those are probably deep shots. I think Owen Casey's best chance is that he gets traded to an org that needs an outfield, because while he's still young at 22 and a half, like, I think he's ready. He's made the strides we want to see. He's sacrificed a little bit of the power for contact, and it's paid off. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see him up and get some time, but again, this is a kind of crowded situation right now because that's a really good outfield. I mean, PCA is a Gold Glove center fielder. Ian Happ's won 3 straight Gold Gloves. And then you have Kyle Tucker now as well. Without an injury, there's not a spot.
Nope. Ian Happ's won 3 straight Gold Gloves? Really?
3 straight Gold Gloves, yep.
Yeah, I knew you won a couple. I didn't realize it was 3 in a row. Man,
yep. Good, crazy.
Good for Ian Happ. I've always loved Ian Happ. Like, I think I talked about him, you know, when we did our outfield episode, where it's just like, he's just so consistently solid.
Yeah, and his bat's underrated too.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Ian Happ is just like a great, like, third outfielder for fantasy, like, phenomenal third outfielder, and really good. 3 straight Gold Gloves. You go, Ian Happ. Good for you. But yeah, you look at the ADP for all these Cubs guys. I mean, they're all like last few rounds of a DC. I mean, the highest one outside of Matt Shaw is, I think it was Owen Casey. Yeah, Owen Casey. Why does Cade Horton is at 626 ADP. Owen Casey 650, Ballesteros 670, Kevin Alcantara 735. So these are all, I mean, where's Shanta? Oh, 741. Yeah, these are all late, you know, last, you know, handful of rounds or even last round or two upside flyers. I mean, I think the highest upside of all these guys in the outside of Matt Shaw does go to Alcantara. You know, he's always shown, you know, above average power, good speed. Hits the ball on the ground a little too much. The barrel rate was a bit lower compared to, like, the EV and hard hit rate last year, but he's probably the most fun profile here. Casey, I still have a little bit of concerns about how much average he does hit for long term, but I'd be okay taking a flyer on one of these guys. You know, again, they're like your 10th, 11th, 12th outfield or whatever it is at the end of a DC. I'd be fine with that. But outside of that, you know, 12, 15 teamers, you're just waiting to see, you know, when an opening happens, whether it's an injury or whatever, and then maybe picking them up off the waiver wire. But Cade Horton, you think he gets time in the majors this year? I mean, the rotation is full, not really full of, like, great arms, but I know, you know, obviously he missed some time last year. How much time do you think we see Cade Horton in the majors?
Not much. I mean, he's injury-wise, like, he's really behind. There's been some negative things behind the scenes that I've heard about Horton and the injury, so that's a little bit concerning to me. I think it's going to be a slow process with him because the arm talent's still there. I think they're going to baby him. I don't think he's draftable, honestly, in a redraft league unless you just want a last-round shot in a 50. Just given what I've heard, there are definitely some major worries about Horton and his arm injury.
Yeah, I think he falls into the upside thing, but at that point, I'd probably want to take an upside flyer on, you know, one of the bats as opposed to Cade Horton. But definitely a lot of fun names on the verge of, you know, making the major leagues for the Cubs. Next one, keep it right in the National League Central with the Cincinnati Reds. And, you know, this one, I think it's really, you got obviously Rhett Lauder. There's a couple other guys I think maybe could, like, You know, maybe we'll see Reese Hines again. I don't know if I'm at any interest, really. Chase Burns, I don't think we see. If we do, it's a cup of coffee late. Same with, like, you know, maybe we get a cup of coffee from Sal Stewart or, you know, I don't, Cam Collier, maybe, probably not. But really, I think it boils us down to Rhett Lauder. Came up last year, had a pretty good four starts, ERA under two in those four starts. I mean, kind of like, you know, almost like the Matt Shaw of the pitching side of the world here, prospect world, where he's not flashy whatsoever. But, you know, when I think of, you know, number three starter, like Rhett Lauder is kind of like the name that always pops up into my head, where he's going to be really solid. Like, he's more of a high floor guy than a high ceiling guy. But again, actually, it was six starts last year, excuse me, and a 1.17 ERA in those six starts. And that could have a huge K rate, but keeps the walk rate in check. I think he can, you know, not be hurt too much by the home ballpark. But that Cincinnati rotation currently is full. But, you know, as they've got Nick Martinez in the fold there as well. But I think Rhett Lauder still gets, you know, 20, or I'd say around 20 starts there. And we obviously know Lodolo has a hard time staying healthy. Andrew Abbott has some injuries. So is Hunter Green. So who knows? But I think 20 starts for Rhett Lauder. I'd be fine drafting him late in a 12-15 teamer. And holding him on my bench for a little bit, because I think he'll be starting pretty soon. But I don't know. What are your thoughts here on Lauder and anybody else that you like from the system for this year?
Yeah, I think Lauder obviously sees some natural progression. He's not going to pitch to the level that we saw in the majors. I worry about the bat missing ability. I still think there's a serviceable starter in that profile, though. Like you said, it's probably a 3-4 type. It's not going to be a high-end starter by any means. Chase Burns, do they rush him? He hadn't pitched professionally. I doubt it. Maybe we see him at the end of the season. So that's a little bit of a concern. Chase Petty could come up. Like, that's one we could see a little bit more time. I think, like, Sal Stewart, probably more 2026. This team has a lot of guys that have that ETA, in my opinion, 2026 ETA.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure I see a lot with 2025 unless it's, like, very in. Their relievers are interesting. You could see a Zach Maxwell or Luis May. Yes, they struggle with walks, but also those are some elite stuff, high strikeout guys that pump over 100 miles an hour. So, I think that, you know, we're looking at not a lot of impact from their prospects. I would say Rhett Lauder being the most obvious one, and he already debuted.
Yes, you know what? I was just kind of looking at their depth chart. You know what I think could be a realistic long-term outcome? And he's on this team already. I see Lauder as being kind of like a Brady Singer type.
Yeah.
I mean, Singer's decent. He's had a couple years where he was better than decent. But overall, Singer's been like a 3-4 throughout his career for the most part. He'll be 2 or 3 depending on if Lodolo wants to, you know, show up and be healthy this year. But, I like Rhett Lauder. I don't love Rhett Lauder, but I think he has some solid value this year. But, yeah, outside of him, don't really see a whole lot here. Right, next up, we got the Colorado Rockies. A lot of names that could be up this year, but, you know, Dolander, I think, is the most exciting name. Probably see Adiel Amador again at some point, probably at, you know, various levels. We probably see like a Zach Veen, maybe a Yankee Fernandez, you know, Drew Romo, I think will be up at some point too. And maybe, you know, another name or two, maybe a Kyle Karros. There's a lot of names that could be up, but I think the one... the two that are most interesting are Dolander and Amador, but we'll start with Dolander. I mean, obviously, as usual, this Colorado rotation is terrible. It's projected to be Herman Marquez, Ryan Feltner, Kyle Freeland, Antonio Sensatella, and Austin Gomber. So it's just a matter of, like, all right, when do we see Dolander? When do they think he's ready to bring him up? Not, you know, these guys holding him back, so... I'll give me an over-under, Chris. What do you think? Obviously, I know you love Dolander. You've been a big Dolander guy. But how much do you think we see from him at the major league level this year? I'll give you, over-under 100 innings.
Yeah, I think that's probably the mark I'd set. I think there's a realistic shot he's on the OD roster. I mean, they've said that all offseason. I mean, nobody's really paid attention or listened, because when I put out a tweet today about non-debuted prospects that could realistically be on the opening day roster, everybody was like, oh, Colorado would never do that. They've been saying all offseason that they're going to give him a chance to win a spot out of spring. Does that mean it happens? No, it doesn't. but I do think that 100 innings is more than realistic, and that wouldn't shock me a bit if he got, if he's not up on opening day, which, like I said, it was on the lower end of my, like, probability tier, but I think that you're looking at a couple months in the minors, like he's going to go Triple A, which really would, there's no point. I mean, what would be the point of sending Chase Dolander to Triple A in that environment? Just send him to the majors. Like, the stuff's going to play. Like, you almost destroy his confidence by sending him to AAA and pitching in the PCL. I think that that's a terrible idea, personally. But they probably do. I mean, it's the Rockies. I was curious on Albuquerque's park factors. I know that the entire PCL is obviously bad, but I was going to pull up Matt Eddy's Baseball America park factors, which are the best out there, probably the only out there. Yeah, you don't want to pitch in Albuquerque. It's a really crazy park factor.
I feel like, wasn't it like second worst to Reno?
Yep. It's El Paso's up there. It's like, for home runs, last year it was El Paso, Tacoma, and Albuquerque. It was actually, Reno was a little bit less of a home run friendly environment. So
really? Okay.
That was just 2024 data, and he's got multiple year data too. So actually, let's go to the 3-year data, because I always find that interesting. Albuquerque. Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers are pretty absurd. Like, I mean, the home run factors are just off the charts, and I don't know. I mean, that's not an environment you'd want to send him in, but it's against the Rockies. If he's ready, if he's pitching well, like, what do you have to lose by sending them to the majors out of the gate? I don't know. I mean, I think that Dolander has the shot. I think 100 innings is more than realistic, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it's like every ballpark is hitter friendly out there, but it's like everyone besides, like, I want to say it was like Sugar Land and Sacramento, I think were the two that were just like not extreme hitter friendly. Everything else is just like ridiculous factors, if I recall correctly. But yeah, I think over under 100 is pretty solid. And, you know, if you can get like a mid 3 ERA and around a K per inning this year out of him, something like that, obviously this would provide some value. And let's see, he's going, I don't know where his ADP is. I'm going to guess it's in like the 400 something range. Let's see. Oh, wow, it's 636. That's way lower than I thought it was going to be.
Is that just DC's?
Yeah, this is just DC's.
Yeah.
On,
well, that's a really good value.
Oh, absolutely. So that's around like, what, 42, 43 on average in a 50 round draft. Yeah, absolutely. Sign me up for that. See, Amador is going, you know, a little bit later than that. I think Amador is most of the season in the minors. They brought in Tyro Estrada. I mean, I think you want to get Amador, get his confidence back. It was a pretty bad year overall, except for the 1 week he came here and played in Portland, where he was Babe Ruth for a week. But yeah, I think Amador is more time in the minors than the majors. I don't have like a ton of intrigue in a DC. I can see getting a share in the DC that late if he wants some middle infield help, but. The other name I want to mention is real quick, because he's technically a prospect still. I think Seth Halverson leads this team in saves this year.
Yeah.
And that's not me like going on a limb. This bullpen is terrible. Right now, the current projected closer is Tyler Kinley. Zero confidence in him being the guy the entire year. Maybe he is the start of the year, but if I had to bet money, I'd say Halverson leads the team in saves. I mean, he has two fastballs that are 100 miles an hour, four-seam, two-seam. He's got the splitter. He's got the slider. Both of those are good bat missing pitches. So, yeah, I think Halverson. Maybe the ERA is a little higher. It's Colorado, obviously, but I can see him, you know, eating upper teens saves and plenty of strikeouts to go along with it. You know, so yeah, Halverson. If I get him as like my RP 3 or 4 in drafts, yeah, I like that a lot. All right, let's go on to who's next up here. Oh, the Dodgers. Everyone's blocked. All right, next.
Yep.
I mean, I tweeted out the other day, like, just to be funny, like, oh, coming to a theater near you in 2025, the Michael Bush saga part 2, Dalton Rushing. That wasn't like a direct comp. Everyone's like, oh, Rushing's better. Yeah, I know Rushing's a little bit better. It wasn't like a direct comp, but it was the situation where it's like really good bat that's, you know, have performed well in the upper minors, just not getting a chance. You know, when the offseason started, you know, back in, you know, October, November, I was like, all right, you know, I could see Rushing getting like the left field gig. Then they played him in left down the stretch in Oklahoma City, AAA, end of last year. But then Teoscar Hernandez comes back. All right. And then they go out and get Michael Conforto, which is kind of weird. But now it's like, all right, they also have Tommy Edman. I mean, they still got guys like Andy Páez and James Outman trying to get back into the mix here, who are still on the outside looking in. So where does that leave rushing outside of an outfield injury? Do they go to rushing, or do they go to Páez? Do they go to Outman? Or, you know, obviously if Will Smith gets hurt, then they probably go to rushing, sure. But they have Austin Barnes, who I know they like. So it's like, I just wonder, like, we kind of what we said about Kobe Mayo in the AL version, is rushing going to be the AL version or the NL version of Mayo this year? Just a really good, you know, bat in the upper minors that just doesn't get a shot. I kind of have that fear, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that rushing is an elite bat. I've waxed poetically about him plenty. Like, there's a lot to love about Dalton rushing from a bat standpoint. But, I mean, how much does he play? I think that's a major question this year. I mean, Will Smith, if we're being honest, has shown some signs of decline the last couple of years. He'll be 30 this year. Do they want to catch him less? Austin Barnes is still on that roster. I see a path for rushing to catch 1 or 2 days a week, but the path in the outfield is seemingly gone now that they continue to sign. They signed Conforto. They brought Teoscar back. So Ohtani is going to clog the DH. No one else is going to DH. So, I mean,
yep.
There's just not really a spot here because you also have Andy Páez and James Outman vying for time. It's a tough look right now. I don't see a good path for rushing, unfortunately. And I mean, I love the bat. So beginning of the offseason, absolutely thought he could have a path. But as they signed a Conforto, which I don't think they needed, and
nope,
they brought back Teoscar, which makes sense, it's just kind of, it's a wash.
They didn't need to get, like, him and probably two of the relievers. But, they got him to the Dodgers, and everyone wants to go to the Dodgers now. But, all right, real quick, who has more plate appearances in 2025, rushing or Mayo?
Probably Mayo. I think they open a spot, or they trade him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a better chance of Mayo getting traded than rushing. But
I agree.
I'd say under 300 for both, but yeah, I think I would lean Mayo as well. And then outside of him, I mean, maybe you see one of the arms again. Maybe you see like a Justin Robleski. I don't know. No, I don't think anybody really gets a lot of run. Obviously, there's like 9,000 pitchers already in that rotation who are all very good, and they'll probably bring back Kershaw at some point this year, like they always do. So don't really see any big impacts unless rushing gets that time. All the other guys, Hope, Vargas, Morales, DePaulo, et cetera, are all, you know, 2026 or later ETAs. So, all right, next up here we have the Miami Marlins. Definitely not blocking anybody from that lineup here, but obviously don't have quite the, you know, they don't have a Dalton rushing waiting in the wings either. But Miami does have a couple guys that could, you know, a few guys get some time this year. Getting the two big bats, Augustin Ramirez, catcher or first base, though they only used him at catcher after they acquired him from the Yankees, so I think that's kind of tipping their hand how they look at him long-term. Davison De Los Santos, obviously acquired from Arizona, could play one of the two corner infield positions. Maybe you see, you know, a Robbie Snelling or something like that. You know, Graham Pauly's there. I'm not really intrigued at all by him anymore, so probably focus more on Ramirez and De Los Santos here. You know, I think that actually the bigger name is probably De Los Santos, even though I have Ramirez ranked higher. I like the bat more with Ramirez. Saw him several times live in Double A when he's with the Yankees. Was really impressed. He was hitting it all hard all over the field. He's a guy I think is going to get, you know, 400 plus plate appearances with Miami this year. And I think De Los Santos does as well. But, you know, Chris, we've documented the issues with him, how the numbers were inflated by playing in extreme, you know, hitter-friendly environments in both Double A and Triple A for Arizona before coming over to Jacksonville, which was much less hitter-friendly than those two ballparks were. So, I don't know. I'm not interested in De Los Santos at all this year. Maybe he'll pop 25 home runs, but I think he hits like 220 along the way or lower than that. But Ramirez I do like. You know, he's, again, not one to draft in like a 12-team, 15-team or right off the bat, but in a DC, you know, gives my third, fourth catcher, I like that a lot for this year.
Yeah, Ramirez is really good. I mean, this roster is bad. I mean, there's certainly an opportunity for Ramirez to be in the opening day lineup. People in my comments were getting all mad about that. A team like the Marlins would never put him in the opening day lineup. I mean, this is a team that has Nick Fortes and Liam Hicks. Liam Hicks is going to get returned. They picked him in the Rule 5 draft. there is zero chance that Liam Hicks sticks on this roster. Zero. And Nick Fortes is not good. The Marlins, they ain't getting a draft pick anyway. I mean, regardless, like, this is not a team that's worried about that. I mean, if they call, they're going to bring Ramirez up this season. Why not bring him up early in the year and see what he's got? I mean, he has AAA experience. I think that it wouldn't be surprising if he's on the opening day roster, but also he might be down for a few months. We don't know. But people in the game have been talking like that Ramirez could actually be up on opening day, and I buy into that. I think 500 plate appearances is a real possibility. I think 250 is a possibility, too. It's just, honestly, I have no idea. So I'm looking at Ramirez as a potential option. Davison, I don't know. I mean, I'm not into him. I've not been into him at all. He may run into 30 home runs some seasons. I think the chase and the contact issues are just too much for me to want to invest, especially in a rookie season. I mean, he'll turn 22 this year, but I think there's going to be some big bumps and bruises. We saw him get exploited a bit in AAA last year, especially after the move to Miami. Power's undeniable. I mean, it's some of the best power in the game, minors or majors. But the contact and approach are just terrible. So yep. I'm not interested in Davison de los Santos.
No, neither am I. But I was looking at the ADP for Miami. So NFBC, for those that don't play on it, is a two-catcher. Like every league is two catchers, so ADP for catchers gets pushed up. And even a projected starting catcher for the Miami Marlins has an ADP on the two-catcher format platform of 606. That's Nick Fortes. I mean, nobody is Nick Fortes, nor should they be. And Ramirez is at about pick 438 on average, and De Los Santos right basically 400 on the dot. So you'll get them both in that range. I would much rather target Ramirez this year than De Los Santos. Next up here, we go up to the Milwaukee Brewers. A sneaky good farm system up there in Milwaukee, but I don't know if we get like a ton of value this year. I mean, you got to get Caleb Durbin. You got to get Mizorowski at some point. Black is still there, but kind of blocked at this point. Maybe you see a Casey Hunt or like a Logan Henderson or a Jefferson Cairo. But I think everyone's going to, the popular name right now for this year at least, I think it's Caleb Durbin after his big performance in the AFL when he set the AFL stolen base record. Could easily grab that third base gig with shortstop open now with Adames gone. Probably you see Joey Ortiz slide back over to short. Third base is wide open. I mean, obviously the bat isn't there as much as the speed factor is, but he will provide maybe a good amount of steals from that third base spot, Chris. And maybe depending on the fourth league you play in and your eligibility thresholds, could have some dual eligibility, maybe. But speed factor there with Durbin. Are you intrigued by him this year?
I mean, honestly, no. Like, I don't see the path for him playing regular. I think it's a utility type. And that's fine. Like, I mean, Durbin's going to run. The power, the EVs are really bad. There's some holes in the swing up in the zone. I know the contact rates look really good in the minors, but I really do worry that he could get exposed by better fastballs up, and he has. All the hype with Durbin, I don't know. I don't know how many plate appearances he gets. Like, that's still my question mark. I'd bet on like 300. I just don't think it's an everyday player right now. I know Oliver Dunn's penciled in at third base in Milwaukee, so it's like, okay, he can easily overcome that. But honestly, like, how different is Oliver Dunn than a Caleb Durbin, like, outside of like stolen bases? So yeah, I mean, there's some factors of Oliver Dunn's game that might be better, and he's a little more experienced as well. So I've just not been as high as most on Durbin, and probably just miss out on him in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I'm definitely not as high on him as most. I mean, I think he could provide some value. I'm not saying he's going to be a zero, but I don't like the Durbin profile in general.
Doesn't work like, most of the time.
What's that?
Doesn't work most of the time. In the
right,
majors.
Yeah, you'll get your exceptions every now and then, sure, but yeah, I just don't like build, and you're not going to build around Caleb Durbin, but yeah, at that point, I try not to be at that point in my draft and be like, oh crap, I need some more, like a lot more speed, you know, and like to the point where I have to kind of make myself draft a guy like Cale Durbin. So that's not me like, you know, crapping on him. I think he could have some value, sure. But yeah, I'm not as into like, what's his ADP? It's, 376 now. If it was like, you know, like 150 after that, like, you know, in the 500s, okay. Yep, definitely could get behind that. But, and that's been, I believe that's been creeping up. I think it was like mid fours to start the offseason, and it's been slowly ticking up every week or two. So it'll probably be up into the 325 range when we get into like March drafts, I think. So I'd much rather have like a Joey Ortiz. Obviously, he's not like a rookie anymore, but Ortiz is going around pick 300. I'd much rather have a Joey Ortiz. Yeah, as for the other two, Mizorowski, you probably see him. He's probably in a bullpen role. I don't think he's a starter long term. Tyler Black, these guys are both going right around pick 550. Mizorowski and Black. And Black still has some, you know, intrigue, but where does he play? I mean, he's got a limited, more of a first base profile now, but Rhys Hoskins is there. I don't know. Do you see any value on Black or Mizorowski this year? Or even like Henderson or Casey Hunt?
Yeah, I think that for Tyler Black, it's a no-go. He doesn't have position. The bat's not great. I mean, he just doesn't have a spot, honestly, and he's not going to hit his way into the lineup. Mizorowski, I think he's in the bullpen. They've kind of hinted at the fact that they're not going to stretch him out this year. Maybe they stretch him out later, but I think that Mizorowski is in that bullpen, and he could be a high-leverage arm for him. I mean, they've got some good guys in the back of that pen, but Mizorowski's stuff is elite. I think he could play up in that shorter role. Casey Hunt, I would say, is a no-go for 2025. I know he's a little bit older. Still pretty young in his pitching development, though. Like the talent, don't see a lot of leeway or pathway for him to find playing time. But Logan Henderson, absolutely. I mean, he's not going to wow you. It's a low 90s fastball, but it's about as unique as it gets because of, you know, the IVB above average. Like, you look at his release height, you look at the IVB, and he's elite. I mean, the fastball is unique. It's a devastating changeup, but he's got a decent slider with good command. So, yeah, I think Logan Henderson could factor in for sure this year. And I love Casey Hunt, but I don't see him factoring into the picture much in 2025.
All right. Next up, we got the New York Mets, who, you know, do have, you know, one path. I mean, they could, I mean, is Jose Siri going to be the everyday elf, you know, center fielder for the entire year? So maybe that's, you know, one spot they could go with. But, you know, they brought in Jesse Winker. I mean, third base was another spot, you know, a month or two ago, but they brought in, you know, they have Jesse Winker in that DH spot. They have Mark Vientos now over at third base. You know, we kind of thought maybe he was sent over to first base if Alonso left, but now Alonso's back, so Vientos back to third, so that kind of closes up that third base spot. So, I mean, it was going to be like maybe Brett Beatty, maybe a little Ronnie Mauricio, and do we see Chet Williams later in the year? I mean, Williams missed a lot of time last year, so did Mauricio for different reasons, but I think the, you know, there's actually a lot of names here that could see time. It's just a matter of how much time. Is you could realistically see Jet Williams, Ronnie Mauricio, Brandon Sproat, Drew Gilbert, Luis Angel Acuna already debuted. You'll probably see him again at some point this year. Jonah Tong could be up. Ryan Clifford. It's a lot of names here, Chris. I mean, any intrigue with any of these guys in a redraft format?
I don't know. I mean, this team's pretty stacked. Brought Pete Alonso back. There's just minimal paths to playing time. I mean, they pay Jesse Winker. You can probably be sure that he's going to play as long as, you know, he's healthy. I don't know. I just don't see a great path for a lot of these guys. Like, Luis Angel Acuna is going to be on the bench, probably serving in that kind of capacity. Bringing Alonso back kind of changes the dynamic of this lineup a bit. And the rotation does have some holes, so I do think that you could see some of these pitchers factoring in, like a Sproat, for sure. I think he's in the minors. He's got some things to clean up. Yeah, Tong, I don't think we see him this year. He's still 21. And yeah, there's some things with him that I don't love. Ronnie Mauricio, he's hurt. His legs and knee is still jacked up to the point where there's some major long-term concerns with Mauricio, unfortunately. I look at the other guys like Drew Gilbert. There's not a true path there. Ryan Clifford, there's no path there for him either. Jet might be the one. I mean, he can play center field.
Yeah, like, so center field, yeah.
So that may be the option. Jet Williams, if any, But I'm more inclined to bet on Brandon Sproat, just given the rotation. I mean, at a certain point, like, I get it. They've got a lot of guys that have perceived upside. But it's Manaea, Senga, who's been an injury risk, Frankie Montas. I mean, he hasn't been healthy at times in his career. David Peterson hasn't been healthy. Clay Holmes has converted a reliever into starter, so who knows what that looks like. And Paul Blackburn. So, yeah, I think there are opportunities for Sproat to get there. It might just be he gets 80 innings kind of in July forward.
Yeah, Sproat and Williams are the two that I was kind of looking at. I mean, Mauricio maybe could have, but you mentioned he's still not 100%. And I don't think he can. I don't think they want to try Mauricio in the outfield. So, like, when that third base gig was open early in the offseason, okay, maybe Mauricio would factor in at some point. But now I think the easier path is the outfield, even though that's not, like, you know, easy per se. But again, center field, you know, Jose Siri, who they got in December via trade from Tampa Bay. You can see Chet Williams, not early. I think it'd be more like July, something like that. But I think the most one I'm most intrigued by is Brandon Sproat, because, you know, I tweeted this out probably a month or so ago. It's just the fact that they're going to have anywhere from like the second to fifth highest payroll this year. You know, probably third highest payroll for the most part. And that rotation is not bad, but it's not as good as you'd expect from a team with this payroll. I mean, Manaea is solid. Kode Senga obviously can pitch very well, but he missed a lot of time last year. Montas has been so up and down in his career. Who knows what you get from him? Same with Peterson. Holmes converting from being a reliever. And then Paul Blackburn's just, you know, he's Paul Blackburn. So who knows? I think, you know, injury or two happens. I think Sproat's next one up, but I think he gets a lot of time. And then obviously you're not going to get Christian Scott this year with the Tommy John surgery. So you won't see him this year. So I think Sproat gets some time. I'd say 15 to 20 starts out of Brandon Sproat this year. So I'm definitely intrigued by him. And maybe I throw a later on flyer on the Acuna or a Williams or something like that, just because they do have, you know, some, you know, good speed, a little bit of pop, not much, but a little bit of pop. So I can see myself throwing a late one flyer on one of those two guys. Next up here, Philadelphia Phillies, which is basically we got Painter coming up midseason. Don't think you see a whole lot of Aiden Miller. I mean, maybe you see a Gabriel Rincones or a Otto Kemp or something like that, but really it's Andrew Painter. So obviously, Chris, Painter's, you know, maybe the number one pitching prospect in the game, or at least, you know, top two or three. But they've already said they're not going to rush him up, and they're going to bring him back sometime midseason. We'll say July. So where would you feel, like, what formats, what ADP, etc., where would you feel comfortable and when drafting an Andrew Painter this year?
I'm probably not taking him in most redrafts. I mean, if they're saying July, then it's probably later. Like, it's a risk in redraft, and a dynasty is an absolute buy. I know they've given him an invite to big league camp. No shock, he got an invite to big league camp several years ago before he had the surgery. I don't know. I just look at this and what they've said about him. How many innings does he get? I mean, you got to be willing to sit on him quite a while here to get production. Who knows what that production's like this year? I mean, we know the stuff's good. Also, just coming off the surgery, like, I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to slow play him back. They probably want him in the playoffs. So I'm probably not touching Andrew Painter. I don't know where his ADP is, but to me, like, I don't think he's draftable in a lot of redraft formats.
ADP was a lot higher back in like November, December.
Sure.
But since January, 379. And I bet you if I looked at like the last 2 weeks, it's probably past 400 at this point. So in a DC, I mean, if I could get him closer to 500 in the DC, all right, that upside in the second half of the year, I could see it. And I wouldn't be like entirely shocked if or when like Lizardo gets hurt or something like that. Maybe yeah. I don't think they bring him up. Something happens in April. I don't think they're bringing him up regardless. But, you know, if it's like, you know, middle of June, he's pitching well and Lizardo goes down, okay, I could see them bringing up Painter then. But again, I don't think it'd be April or May, but maybe that July ETA moves up a little bit. If there's an injury and they just manage his innings rest of the season and skip him every now and then, limit him to four innings, whatever it may be. Because it's really not like a ton of pitching depth here or good pitching depth. So I could see them maybe moving him up a little bit, but yeah, it's really just him. Outside of that, I don't have any interest in Rincones or Kemp or anybody else that might be up this year. I mean, Eden Miller next year could be a decent one, but that is not for the show. Next up here, how many more teams do we get? We have five more teams, two of which don't got a lot going on. So this next team does, the Pittsburgh Pirates, sneaky good system. Pittsburgh's, if they can figure out the hitting side, you know, Pittsburgh's kind of starting to build something there. It's almost like, I think they're like a year behind like where the Detroit Tigers are, where like maybe next year Pittsburgh could be, you know, in maybe not contention, but doing something. Bubba Chandler is going to be up for a big chunk of this year. You know, maybe it's opening day. Maybe it's more like April, May. We'll see. You probably get some Thomas Harrington this year. You got to get some Nick York this year. Maybe a late season call up from Termar Johnson. Those are kind of the names we're looking at here. But Bubba Chandler, I mean, could be the number one. I mean, you have him as your number one pitching prospect. We went over that a few episodes ago in our pitching prospects part of our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking series, which is probably episode 367-ish, I'm guessing. No idea. Somewhere's around there. You can find it, obviously. But he probably gets a good chunk of time this year. You know, top three, locked in, Skeens, Jones, Keller. After that, penciled in right now, it's Bailey Falter, Johan Oviedo. They've both been okay. You know, they're nothing special, but they've been fine in their, for the most part, in their major league career. But they're not going to hold back a Bubba Chandler but when he's ready. So, I mean, we talked about in the last episode about Jobe and Rocker being probably the two biggest arms in the AL. I think Chandler's right there with them. So do you think, you know, first off, when do you think we see Bubba Chandler this year, Chris? And do you think he's going to be the top rookie pitcher to target this year in redraft leagues?
I mean, I think that opening day is a real possibility. That's the talk internally, is they hope that a good spring could lead to an opening day debut. And not that he would be the opening day starter, but he would be on the opening day roster. I mean, they did the same thing with Jared Jones last year, who had an elite spring. Chandler will be the same age that Jones was last year. I mean, this is not a team that's shown that they would super tube players. I know, oh, they didn't bring up Paul Skeens on opening day. Well, Paul Skeens wasn't built up and ready to be pitching in the rotation on opening day. He had to be built up in the minors. And so Chandler's built up. I mean, he made it at AAA last year. He was pitching consistent innings. He steadily improved every season. This team is a perfect opportunity for Chandler to come up and be on the opening day roster. I mean, he's shown the ability to go seven innings. He went 7 2/3 at one point last year. So he finished the year so strong in AAA that I don't have any doubts that if he's good in spring training, which I believe in the stuff, obviously, I think it's elite. I think it's a real possibility that he is in the opening day rotation. I know he's not Rule 5 eligible. They'd have to add him to the 40-man. So that's obviously a spot that they would have to give up. But I don't think it's crazy to sit here and say that Bubba Chandler could not be in the opening day rotation because the Pirates. That's the only answer we got, because the Pirates wouldn't do that. Well, they did it last year with Jared Jones, so... Yep.
Sure did.
And there's a reason why they didn't do it with Paul Skeens. Other prospects, well, they haven't had anybody of this caliber that could be up and ready. Also, this is a draft pick, which is extremely valuable. That money that they could get if Bubba Chandler wins Rookie of the Year is much more valuable than trying to super two him. I mean, it just is. So I look at this rotation. Obviously, you've got Skeens, you've got Keller, you've got Jones. And it's Bailey Falter and Johan Oviedo. So tell me that Bubba Chandler can't be in the opening day rotation. I don't really see why he could not. There's no, and every argument that I've seen against it is false. I mean, the Pirates aren't just keeping him down for service time reasons because they didn't do it with Jared Jones last year. So, I mean, I believe that it's possible. I believe that he gets 120-plus innings. I mean, we saw, I know Jones missed a little bit of time with injury, so he got 121 in the majors. I mean, I look at Chandler. He pitched 120 last year. I mean, it wouldn't be crazy if he got 140, 150. Yep. I think he's ready for it.
I think bare minimum, barring something unforeseen, you see 100-plus from Chandler. Easy. Like I said, anything can happen, but I would strongly bet on over 100. And if anybody were to, I mean, we talk about, you know, Shaw and Cruz being the front runners, I think Chandler maybe he's number three. But he's absolutely could win that National Rookie of the Year. He's definitely in that mix. And if he's up there for most or all of the season, gets 120, 130 innings or even more, yeah, I think he's definitely got a really good shot. And out of all the rookie pitchers this year, those big three we mentioned with Jobe, with Rocker, with Chandler, I'd probably go Jobe, then Chandler, then Rocker. It's so hard. Like, they're all super close, but like, and they're all kind of in that similar ADP range. I would love to have any of the three. At that point, you're probably drafting their, seventh pitcher or something like that. At that point, if you have a rotation you already feel good about, you want to go with the upside. I think it's not like super risky at that point in your draft. So, yeah, I'm very much okay with the Chandler ADP, which is actually pushing 300. It's at 286, though. That probably is going to move up a little bit. Don't be surprised if it's like 240. Yeah. So, especially if he's pushing well in spring training and it's looking more and more likely to be in the opening day rotation, that'll definitely get closer to 200 and 300. Absolutely. The other name, real quick, I think Nick York, I get some time, though. They just signed Tommy Pham earlier today, which I totally missed until just now when I'm looking at their depth chart, and I'm like, why is Tommy Pham leading off playing right field? That happened like 5 hours ago. I totally missed that. But I don't know. When York, now obviously he's played some second, some outfield. I don't fully trust Nick Gonzalez. I think Nick York could take over that spot. I think he could still take over maybe placing a little bit of outfield too, maybe both spots. He had some really good numbers, and he was hitting very well in AAA last year, especially after the trade from Boston to Pittsburgh. Kind of solid numbers in both hard hit rates and contact rate in AAA were both pretty solid. So I think Nick York could be a sneaky good value as well in like a DC format.
I'm in on York.
Yeah, you like York too in a DC?
Oh yeah, I think he's the opening day second baseman. If not, there was a better chance he could get outfield time before the Pham signing. But I mean, York's better than Nick Gonzalez at this point.
I 100% agree. I don't trust Nick Gonzalez to take that spot. I was never a huge York guy, but he's starting to I'm starting to like him a little bit more. Definitely a sneaky target for sure. And the ADP is like 450-ish, so around 30 or so of a DC. I can see taking him there. Next up here, the next two teams, not a lot for 2025. San Diego has traded away basically everybody, but outside of DeVries and Ethan Salas, do not think either of them are up this year. Salas got the double A last year, two years ago now. No, I still don't think we see Ethan Salas this year. If anything, it's a cup of coffee. And I still would put a lower percent chance on that. I think they realized they kind of screwed him up a little bit by rushing him. So I think it's going to be a lot of double A this year, a little bit triple A, something like that. DeVries, no shot at this year. I mean, maybe we see a Tirsa Ornelas, but I don't know. I don't see any reason to drop anybody from the San Diego system this year for prospects. Any thoughts on this situation here, Chris?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all their top prospects for me are teenagers. Like, just looking at the... going down the list, Cash Mayfield, I think, is going to turn 20. He was an older drafty, unless I have his birthday in wrong in my sheet.
No, you have it right. Yeah, I have him at 19.96. Yep. He's years old right now, so...
Yep, so... Yeah, you would have to get down to their seventh best prospect for me, Isaiah Lowe, to find the first one that's not a teenager. So kind of shows you what you need to know. I mean, Tirso is interesting. I mean, he's going to play. There's some fascinating traits. He showed some improvements last year. So I think he may be worth a stab really deep. But yeah, I mean, other than that, he's probably the only one.
Yep. Not a lot of intrigue there. Maybe in a couple of years when DeVries and Salas are getting closer, but that is not this year. Next up, San Francisco. I mean, they got one name, but outside of that one name, it's not a lot. I mean, Bryce Eldridge, just turned 20 not too long ago. Got the AAA last year. I mean, I think we see Eldridge this year, absolutely. But I don't think it's as early as people are going to be hoping it's going to be. They pushed him a little bit. I feel like he stays in AAA for at least the first half of the year. Maybe he's like a, right after the All-Star break kind of call up. I don't know. Do you think we see him earlier than that, Chris?
No, I think he's still prospect eligible in 2026. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
No.
I mean, let's think about it logically. Eldridge spent most of the year in single A and high A last year. They got really aggressive with him. yes, he went to AAA, but it was for the final week because it was the only league still playing. They wanted him to keep playing because they were sending him to the AFL, and they didn't want him to have any time off. They wanted the consistency to stay. So they bump him to double, and they bump him to triple. I would bet that Eldridge goes back to AA. I have no direct insight. I don't have any connections in the Giants org. So I bet he goes back to AA, spends a couple of months there, goes to AAA for a couple of months, and then I'm thinking August, September call-up. I just don't see – he just turned 20 like a couple months ago, so I don't see them pushing him, to be honest.
No, totally agree. Maybe you see some Carson Wisenhunt hunt this year. Wade Meckler, I guess, is still prospect eligible. Not a lot. Any other name you want to throw into the hat here?
Nah, I mean, you could see Wiz. Like, Carson Wisenhunt would be the interesting one. He regressed majorly last year, so that's something to keep an eye on. Like,
yeah,
the system's not good. I mean, if we're being honest, there's just nothing here. They've got some guys at lower levels. They just signed top international guy in Josuar De Jesus Gonzalez. I don't really see any significant impact in 2025 from this system.
Nope. 100% agree. So two teams we can kind of fly through there with San Diego and San Francisco. Two more teams here. This next team does have some names that'll be up this year of note. That's the St. Louis Cardinals. You got to see, you know, probably two arms, Quinn Matthews, Tink Hentz. I would bank on Matthews getting a lot more time than Hentz, but I do think we see Hentz at some point this year. And then you probably get a Thomas Tajaisi as well. People are going to ask about Weatherholt, maybe, but if anything, it's late season. He's more of a 2026 guy, in my opinion. So, yeah, Matthews, Hentz, Tajaisi. You know, look at the ADPs for those guys. Matthews is going just inside pick 400 on average. Tajaisi is about 575. And Markievicz Tink Hentz is at 660, so more of a late round flyer there. But the two kind of want to talk about here are, you know, Tajaisi, you know, could weigh some second, some third, some short. He's played all three of those positions, and Matthews being one of the biggest breakouts of the 2024 minor league season. Now, you know, considered a top 10 pitching prospect by most. Do you see, you know, I see an easier path to playing time for Matthews than Tajaisi at this point, because they still got, you know, Nolan Gorman is still there. I mean, they'll probably give him another shot at some point. I mean, if Arenado gets dealt, that would absolutely help, but that's no guarantee. You know, Brendan Donovan's in the mix as well. So before an Arenado trade, there's not like a concrete opening for Tajaisi, but his versatility definitely will help. I don't think he plays short outside of an injury to Mason Wynn, because Mason Wynn's so good at short. It's probably second base or third base. Arenado getting traded will definitely help. But that rotation, I mean, Gray is good. Eric Fede was okay last year. Miles Mikolas, Andre Pallante, Steven Matz. I mean, I don't think those guys are really going to hold back a Quinn Matthews. So I think he could get around 100 innings this year for sure. I think there was some rumblings of him getting called up late last year. Obviously did not happen. But I think he's probably better than everybody in that rotation besides the Sonny Gray at this point. So I see a, you know, again, 100 plus innings from him this year.
I think so too. I mean, that rotation has plenty of question marks. I mean, they're kind of old. And I mean, while it's like high floor type, they're not all that great because the floors are still like, I mean, Mikolas throws a lot of innings. Steven Matz, like, who even knows? Like, they've got Andre Pallante penciled in. I think there's an opportunity here for Quinn Matthews and Michael McGreevy to get plenty of reps. McGreevy presents an opportunity for a lot of innings and pretty high floor, low K profile. And Quinn Matthews, I think he could easily vault towards the top of this rotation and be this team's number two behind Sonny Gray. I mean, Fede's solid, but I don't see why Quinn Matthews couldn't make that leap. The talent's there. So JC's interesting. I mean, he debuted last year, which is a good sign. How does he fit into the puzzle? I mean, right now, it might be a kind of a utility piece around the infield.
Yeah.
Arenado probably gets moved, which then that opens up a spot. Where and how, I think, is the question. Like, who goes to third in this instance? Like, does JC just play third? Maybe. I mean, you could put Jordan Walker back there, I guess.
Right.
And it opens up an outfield spot. You move Donovan to the outfield and Tajaisi at second. Who knows? I mean, this is an interesting team for 2025, but yes, there are the opportunities. I don't think you want anything to do with Tink. He hasn't stayed healthy. He left his final start of 2024 and was injured. So I don't know the status right now. I need to figure out exactly what happened. I was told by somebody there that it seemed to be a back injury, which that's a concern. Small frame, hasn't been very durable, might be a reliever. So I don't want Tink for 2025.
Yeah, no, I don't either. If anything, late round dart throw, but he'll probably go a few rounds before that in a DC. And yeah, I don't see him pitching many innings this year at all at the major league level. But yeah, I think Sajazy's, you know, I think he's obviously not a standout anywhere, but he was one of the better performers out there in the AFL, as he should have been, one of the more advanced guys that was out there this year, along with like a Matt McClain. But I think he could be a low end starter. Maybe he's a guy that has dual eligibility, provides value that way. Like, I can see him, it's not a direct comp, but just a kind of like similar overall value range. Like a Willie Castro has like multiple eligibilities. Help you out in that regard, provide a little bit of value offensively, more of a bench guy that you plug in here and there. I think that's like what Sajazy is long term. I don't think he's ever going to be like a starter or even like a starting corner or middle infielder for your fantasy team, but definitely could provide some low-end value. All right, last up here, we get the Washington Nationals. We got Dylan Cruz, obviously the big name here, top five prospect for most. I think who ranked him number one? Which publication put him number one? Was that... Is it Pipeline?
Probably.
I think so. Someone had him number one. I have number four overall for fantasy purposes. Obviously, you're going to see him a lot this year, opening day. Maybe the front runner or, him or Shaw, front runners for National League Rookie of the Year. Probably do not see Travis Sakura this year, more of a 2026 ETA. But you could see maybe a Brady House. Kate Cavalli at some point, maybe. I don't know at this point. Hopefully, I think there's still a little bit of intrigue there, but obviously he's been hurt and missed so much time. So really, it's Dylan Cruz and maybe sprinkle in some Brady House. So obviously we'll start with Dylan Cruz. ADP, it's been actually pretty steady. I thought it would move up by now. It's been like the 125 to 140 range. It's 135 on average in January, or since January 1st in NFBC Draft Champions drafts. So I think you're getting him as, maybe your outfield two if you wait on outfield, or your outfield three. I would love him as my outfield three if I already had two outfielders I felt good about. So I think Cruz could definitely, push for, 20 home runs, 25 steals, something like that this year. I think I have him projected for like 19 and 23 or something pretty close. So, yeah, I think I'm okay with that 135 ADP for Dylan Cruz.
Oh, I'd buy that all day long. I mean, Cruz is such a high floor. He's going to steal bases. I mean, everybody was like, well, he didn't steal at LSU. He didn't need to steal at LSU. That right. College World Series lineup was elite. He didn't need to manufacture runs. But guess what? Dylan Cruz can absolutely steal. It was 25 out of 30 in the minors and 12 of 15 in the majors last year. Pencil him in for 25 stolen bases. I think you can give him 20 home runs, too. I would not be shocked if he hit 20 home runs this season. I know most projections have him a little bit lower, but I'm absolutely buying in on a Dylan Cruz breakout. The talent's there. He's shown good contact skills. He's shown plenty of good under-the-hood metrics. Yeah, I mean, absolutely give me all of Dylan Cruz.
Yep, 100%. And I've been slowly souring on Brady House. I mean, I'm not, like, out on Brady House, but I don't see a major impact this year. I mean, I think he'll debut this year, but I don't think it's for, like, the All-Star break, and I don't think it's a big impact. But any closing thoughts on Brady House?
I think he needs a full year in the minors, so I think he's at best getting a cup of coffee in September. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not drafting him in 2025. I hope for a bounce back this year. I think the only other one to look at this year is Kate Cavalli. Hasn't been healthy. Hopefully he gets healthy. But yeah, I mean, he could be really solid if he gives you 100 innings. I mean, that's probably not pitched in a couple of years. So I don't know. I'm just not that interested in him, even though I believe in the arm talent, because I just don't know how many innings that he's going to get.
I'm going to end this show with just like a fun prediction. I mean, it's bold. I think it's low, very low percent chance of happening, but I can see a future where this happens. Kate Cavalli leads the Nationals in saves this year.
Wouldn't be crazy.
I mean, he's got, like, I saw him back in Double-A. God, what year was that at this point? I don't even remember. 22? It's hard to remember. He's been out for so long. But he's got good stuff. I mean, yeah, good fastball. He's got breakers. He two different breakers, curve and slider. He can miss bats with. And obviously, it's we don't really know what he's looking like right now. But you know, I can see them if they don't like how he's progressing as a starter, I can see them making a switch. And with Finnegan gone, I mean, who's even the predicted closer for them? Like Jorge Lopez or something? I don't even know. Nobody good. So I could see him getting like 13 saves this year and leading the team in saves. So a fun little prediction to close out the show. But all right, last two episodes covered all 30 major league teams, who we could see, who we won't see, who we should be targeting or fading this year at ADP. A lot of good names, and we'll get back to some of the fun topics upcoming. We got a lot of great shows planned, a lot of fun shows planned, get you ready for all your drafts this year. But we'll be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.